21. Can you do something for me? The MVP, Joel Embiid. We're going to talk about that today. And obviously, Dylan Brooks, he's a chatterbox, but there's a situation going on with him. Where's he going to end up next season and moving forward? Let's talk about it here on Hoop Talks.
Just give me a second here, okay?
Why do you always take over?
What the hell was that?
21!
That was so cringe.
Can
that's
you
like
do
a that's
for me.
That's like a newer
song,
level
Justin.
Joke right there.
You can't
bro,
say it's
it
cringe.
Works.
Why am I
it
catching
works.
Strays?
You were 21. Can you do something for me? MVP, MB. Come on, man.
I can't listen to that
Put
song.
Put some respect on my name, bro.
I can't
this
listen.
Is your MVP.
It is my MVP. You disrespected him and Drake at the same
How
time.
How am I disrespecting him?
21. Can you do something for me?
Okay, so how would you start?
He didn't
show?
Say it like
how
that.
How would you start the
Nails
show?
Are fighting.
You know
let
what?
Them have
it's your
thank you.
It's your block. Just take.
I don't know what his issue is, guys. This is his MVP. He was feeling good today, right? Because I had Jokic, and I was wrong.
Jokic
right?
fanboys.
You but yes, we have Joel MVP, Joel Embiid. let me break it down for you. So here's how the voting went. Okay, so he had 73 of the first place votes. All right, Nikola, he had 15 of those. Giannis had 12. And then obviously Nikola, he kind of cleared them in terms of the second place votes. And then Giannis had a bunch of the third place. But with this being said, okay, so this is the first MVP, of course, right? Long overdue, I would say. So, Justin, since you love the man so much.
I'm surprised you went to him first because you guys are fighting.
No, I want to hear.
He wants me to get my.
Look, he got it. He got it, right? His MVP. Congratulations to Joel. Mm-hmm.
We had a vote, so.
Yeah. So enjoy. Go ahead. Go
guys.
Ahead. Just go ahead.
Coronation of Joel Embiid as the best center in the NBA. Nikola Jokic fanboys, we got two words for you. And to quote DX, you can suck it. it's all in the numbers here. It's all in the numbers here. Look at Joel Embiid right here. 30.6 points per game. Led the league in scoring for not one, but the second straight year. First center to do that since Shaquille O'Neal. Joel Embiid also played 68 games this year. So for everybody out there that says, oh, Joel Embiid doesn't play. He doesn't play. He played 68 games this year. That was quite impressive. He's obviously hurt, but he's coming back for game two, right? And also, look, he's the most dominant center in the league. Giannis is the most dominant player, but he's the most dominant big man, and he does it on both ends of the floor. Of course, he's a three-time all defensive team, right? Nikola Jokic, although his defense has improved, it's not on the same level. And look, Nikola, if you're gonna be a three-time MVP, right, three straight years, you have to be something of an icon, a great, a legend. I don't think Nikola Jokic is that. He's not. He's a great player, but he's not. He doesn't deserve to have three straight MVPs. He doesn't deserve it. He was not warranted to have three straight MVPs. If LeBron James can't get three straight MVPs, if Michael Jordan never got three straight MVPs, if Kobe Bryant didn't get two straight MVPs, what makes Nikola Jokic worthy to get three straight MVPs?
Because his team's number one.
I
want to
hear
one.
From Noah and Karina.
No.
Yeah.
Because his team's number one. Why wouldn't it? They're winning. He's helping the team.
No,
he's the main
Sixers
guy.
Came
I mean,
third in the East.
It's a regular season award, so.
Exactly. You know. What I'm saying. Like,
no, but
the
Sixers are a good team. Sixers are a good team.
But so. If that's the case, okay, I know it's a regular season award, too. And I will say, I think for me, it's going to be Embiid. Because if you look at Embiid's points over the course of the year versus compared to Nikola Jokic, Embiid's putting up numbers. Embiid's doing things that we don't get to see at his height sometimes. Well, is he flopping over when he does that? Yes. Is he injuring his own teammates while he does that? Absolutely. But it doesn't stop him from putting up the numbers. And he will do that constantly. Only thing is, again, it doesn't factor in anymore, so it is what it is. But the fact that the Celtics lost to a Philadelphia team without Joel Embiid in the roster still tells me that maybe Philly is still a better, it's still a good team. It's not like Embiid's like, you know, anchoring them through, which he obviously is when the going gets tough, when you have certain matchups and stuff. But overall, like especially against the Celtics, where you thought you would need to have Embiid in the lineup, you saw Harden go off. He had 45 points. So that's all I got to say on that.
I think also one of the biggest things was that I think in the second half of the season, Joel Embiid played a lot better than Nikola Jokic did on both sides of the floor. And I think that was a factor, whereas like at the beginning of the season, it was pretty like close race between them two. And, you know, like you said, like three MVPs in a row is pretty hard to do. Very hard to do. And so I think that's what kind of factored into it. Joel Embiid is the best player on the 76ers. He's the guy. He attracts so much attention on the floor. yes, the team doesn't have a terrible record without him, but at the same time, what are they without him? So I think, you know, he really, really deserves this award, and I'm glad he finally
I just want to say, just shout out to basketball globally, right? The last five MVPs have not come from the United States of America. Giannis back-to-back, Nikola Jokic back-to-back, and now Joel Embiid. So look, again, the last 5 years has shown you that basketball has grown so much as a global game. And look, next year, Luka could win MVP, right?
Or maybe Joel might win again.
Maybe Shai Gilgeous-Alexander wins MVP next year, right?
He got a vote, right?
He got a third-place vote, I think. Third or place, both something like that. But look, I think when we look at the landscape, it was also Joel Embiid's time, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing happened to James Harden. He came second how many straight years, and then they gave him the MVP, right? Mm-hmm. And again, Joel Embiid, I said from the start, I would take him over Nikola Jokic as my center. I think he's just more of a dominating presence on both ends of the court. And I also just think that it was his time. He deserved to win an MVP. He had been kind of passed over the last couple of years because of Jokic, right? And this year, he took over. He solidified himself. His team was a top three seed. They had a way better second half, as you mentioned, than the Denver Nuggets, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what took him apart. I think that game, remember that game against Boston that, again, Jaylen Brown didn't play in their short run, but he scored, what, 50-plus points that game, right? Put the team on his back. He is the Philadelphia 76ers. Yes, James Harden had a great game, won against the Boston Celtics, but they're not going anywhere without that big man in the middle, number 21.
Yeah, and real quick, Shai had 6 fourth-place votes, so shout-out to him and Canada. As for me, I had Jokic all year long. So I'm going to defer because, look, I don't hate Embiid.
Raptors fan is coming out a little bit right there?
Pardon?
Your Raptors fandom is coming out a little bit?
You know, in a way, because, like, you know, the little rivalry we have with them. So, obviously, we want to see him lose, but I think that this was deserved. Okay, you're looking at the numbers, right? Obviously, you pointed out the fact that he's scoring champion this year, but, you know, you're talking top 10 in points per game, rebounds per game, right? Blocks per game. The first in 35-point games this year, obviously, right? So you're looking at that. You're looking at how they've won games. The Sixers are a good team, right? He's the leader of that. And it's a regular season award, of course, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to take anything away from him. And yes, you know, a lot of people who are in the Jokic camp, like myself.
I was going to say.
Right? They talk about the whole joke about the pity MVP and, you know, a sympathy award. I'm going to be real. Like, you can't call it a pity MVP. 33-10.
He led the league in scoring.
Right? This is the first 33-10 year since the merger, right? So I will give him a lot of respect. I think it was long overdue for him. He was knocking on the door. Like, I knew it was going to happen at some point. Had to. Right, I'd be shocked if he ended his career without one of these. So I want to see how he continues to play down the line. But yeah, shout out to Joel Embiid for the MVP, most valuable player for 2023. But now let's move to Memphis. Right, I know they're out. Right, but there's one man obviously that we know very well because we are in the North. He is Canadian and he is Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks. The news with him and the Grizzlies is very interesting, right? Because the Grizzlies, they came out, right? And they said to him, they informed Dylan, we are not bringing you back under any circumstances. But on the bright side, Shams, he comes out and says an early look around the market indicates that there will be some interest for Dylan Brooks. So what's
from
next
China?
For him?
Huh? From China, interesting?
From China? Oh, no. He did not pull out the China jokes. But What team out there should look at him, or teams should look at him and try to bring him in?
The Houston Rockets, maybe. Like, that's just off the top of my head. I know there's a lot of people talking about the Raptors. God, I really hope they don't want that.
We need shooting. I think I'm okay.
Yeah. We need shooting.
Justin, why
we
that
need
face?
Shooting? What are you talking about?
Dylan Brooks and the Raptors would be absolutely sensational.
Why?
Just because he's Canadian doesn't mean
because
shit.
He has the mentality. He's not scared of anybody. He went at LeBron.
He can't even go have a presser afterwards. He's that scared.
He's the same thing that's having him out of Memphis.
Well, there's a whole lot of things in Memphis that need to mature.
They said
in Memphis,
under no
right?
circumstances is he allowed back in the facility. They cut every tie. They said he's banished. He's never coming back no matter what happens. And I think that's the first time I've ever seen that happen in the NBA. I've never seen a team come out forthright and be like, you will never return here. And they said, you will never return. I feel bad for him because I think, I do think he was... some level of a scapegoat because they made so much noise. There was so much happening from the Grizzlies the entire season. They thought they were the ones that were going to make it far. We know the Ja Morant infamous interview with Malika Andrews where he's like, nobody's a problem in the West. It's the East I got to worry about. Like, that's how you're acting, and that's how Dylan, we all knew about Dylan Brooks and his antics on the court too. And yes, you can't be that loud and then lose and then not also face the media afterwards. Mm-hmm. So you do catch a lot of flack for that. But was he a scapegoat? Absolutely.
So what team, though, real quick, what team do you think? If there is one out there.
I think someone that probably needs a little bit of tenacity. As Karina said, I think Rockets will be pretty good. I also could see him actually
Lakers?
Even... No.
You think so?
They
Lakers?
Need some shooting.
Okay, so remember what happened with Matt Barnes and Kobe? Remember Matt Barnes faked the ball? Yeah. And the next year, Matt Barnes played with the Lakers.
I think,
right?
Mavericks.
Yeah, I mean...
I would say Mavericks.
It would be
a
very noisy locker room, though, with Kyrie,
perfect.
Luka, Dylan Brooks, right? Honestly...
But they don't have that, like... They don't have someone who's going to be as greedy as Dylan Brooks would be. And I think that's where he could come
from. As long as it's not Toronto, but I just don't want to...
Okay, but here's the thing. Here's the thing, right? Well, the antics with Dylan Brooks was one thing for sure, right? I think, like, again, offensively, he's bad. I have the numbers right here. I think this year he shot.
Yeah, he shot.
Nice. No, he shot. He shot from the field. 32% from the three-point range. 39% from the field. Last year, guys, he averaged 18 points a game.
I know that.
Like, he had a good year last year, right? And I think maybe just getting out of that Memphis organization. Again, he was the scapegoat and all of that, but. Just get that organization is so immature. They don't have that mature veteran presence right now. And I think if Dylan Brooks could get into a system like the Toronto Raptors with, you know,
that
solid leadership,
I don't want
right?
to hear that in the same sentence.
I think that could actually help him, right?
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see moving forward how it looks with Dylan Brooks, right? There will be a market for him. There will be a market. So don't be surprised if he's, you know, not in China like y'all are joking about on Twitter. Okay.
No.
And thank you for tuning in today. We will be back real soon for more talks about hoop. This is Hoop Talks.
Could the newly minted MVP be back for Game 2 for the Philadelphia 76ers? And can Anthony Davis once again put together a dominant performance and the Lakers go up 2-0 against the defending NBA champions? This is Hoop Talks. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Hoop Talks. Justin Pooney, Creedon Mustafa, Jelani Goodridge.
Impressive intro. Impressive.
I had that coming. I know. And last but certainly not least.
I'm used to it. I'm like, am I here?
I wanted to switch up the... I don't normally go around the horn like that, but I wanted to switch it up today.
Normally you go straight here and then you forget these
two. Yeah, but me and him are kind of arguing right now.
That was very nice.
Yeah, because you're new to the team. I want to make you feel special.
Okay.
Because give it like a week, you're going to end up hating us and you want to come out of
the place. Us? Speak for yourself.
Me probably, yeah.
Exactly.
Speaking of hate... Right? Boston Celtics fans are going to hate this because Joel Embiid could potentially be back for Game 2 against of their Eastern Conference semifinal series. Of course, James Harden went off last game in a 119-115 victory. Jelani, James Harden turned the clock back to 2018, 45 points. Noor, your boy Jason Tatum had 39 in a respectable number in a losing effort. Your Celtics played no defense whatsoever. And Karina, now... potentially, my MVP, Joel Embiid, could be making a return. How much trouble are the Boston Celtics in if Joel Embiid comes back tonight?
Can I just say, going between everybody like that was so chaotic. I loved it, though.
I love it.
I'm like, what,
you don't know whose turn it is to actually speak. But I think the Celtics are in trouble if Embiid comes back because... they were not supposed to lose that game without Embiid playing, but look what happened. They did. And, you know, if you look at both of these teams, they both had, like, very good contributions from their main guys, but now that's where the defense is going to come into play. Who's going to play better defense and be able to get those stops, be able to capitalize and come away with the win? And now that Embiid might be back, I don't know, that just got a lot harder, especially because then the Sixers would gain a very high defensive advantage.
Noor, I want to ask you this. Al Horford, I think, is going to play a big role in defending Joel Embiid and keeping him on the perimeter. Do you think that his sprained LCL is going to be a big factor in how his mobility is, and can he be the MVP type Joel Embiid, or is he going to be a lesser version of him?
I think it's going to to depend on the extent of the injury. He's obviously going to go out and want to put his best foot forward. He's going to want to pretty much play 45 minutes the whole way through. But will he? Probably not. He should be on a time limit, in my opinion, to begin with. Mm-hmm. We might not even see him. I think we'll see him start, but he could probably even take an off well into the a little bit into the first quarter. So I agree. Obviously, they're my Celtics. I saw what happened last game. I saw what went down. But I think in terms of him coming back and maybe not being 100%, it actually might help the Celtics. Because now you have one guy who will demand so much attention. I know he will. But, like, you're also putting the ball in his hand. We could see Mazzulla try something where you're like, okay, now Embiid's coming back. We know he's a little bit hobbled. Let's make Embiid get the shots in. Let's defend Harden. Let's defend Maxey, Tobias Harris, all those guys around you. Let's make Embiid win them the game while he's going to be on his hobbled leg. So I think if they go down that route and if they actually play defense.
It's a big ask.
This could happen. I mean, they got to get this. It's the last game in Boston.
They have to. And I think, John, I'm going to ask you this two-part question. I'm going to ask you to piggyback off about the Celtics defense because that was their calling card last year. And this year, it just seems like they haven't really bought in. But James Harden first. Is he have to be the focal point again? Does he have to be aggressive? Or do you think he needs to really feed Joel Embiid and get him back into rhythm? Or does he turn the clock back and continue doing what he's been doing?
I think it kind of ties in with both questions. Because if you're looking at that game one, the problem that I saw with the Celtics was that covers, the single covers that they went to in that pick and roll. What Mazzulla wanted to do that, right? But it didn't work, right? The fourth quarter, we saw James Harden have 15 points through that pick and roll with that single coverage. So I don't know if that's going to work in game two, right?
Yep.
Now that Embiid's there, right? He's obviously going to draw those guys, draw defenders, of course. That might leave guys open, though, right? You're looking at three-point shooters across the board. Melton, he had a good game. I know a lot of people talk about Maxey and Tobias and those guys like that, but Melton, he had a great performance.
17 points.
Really nice performance, and he's capable of doing that again. He's a veteran, good shooter. So I think that is something to watch. The shooting in this game with Philly, the way that the offense is going to look with Embiid is going to be different, of course. But yeah, when you're talking about Mazzulla and the whole thing with Ime, right? He has to show up in these playoffs, man. He really does. Everyone's looking at the Celtics as that team, right? They are the betting favorite in the Eastern Conference right now, right? And the question it's not really with the team, it's with the coaching. Can the coaching be as good as we saw last year? And the adjustments have to be there too.
And I think, like, we've noticed, especially in the second, I've seen a different Jason Tatum the second half of the season. He hasn't been as efficient. He hasn't, taken over, dominated as much. I've seen it from Jaylen Brown. I've seen Jaylen Brown take over games in that Atlanta series.
I mean, he only had 10 shots, though, in the last game. That's also due to Mazzulla.
Exactly.
Get the ball in his hands. But we got to see more from Jaylen Brown.
Exactly. And I think when I look at this team, there's so much pressure on this core for the Boston Celtics because we don't know what's going to happen after next year, right? Does Jaylen Brown get that all-NBA nod and then be eligible for that super max? Because he's, there's been rumblings he doesn't want to stay in Boston. He's not happy, but he would stay for the super max because, almost $300 million.
I would too.
Who wouldn't, right? You're a contending team as well. Where do you go after that? How do you leave the Celtics to go where else?
I think Jaylen Brown would have no problem having suitors across.
Oh, he would, but I'm saying, like, in terms of if you're already with a contender.
Yeah, like, they're on the cusp.
What's
the line you draw with
year?
How long you stay with the Celtics team before you decide it's
and
not?
That's what I'm trying to get at. Is like, this team has been together for, since 2018-ish, around
that? Yeah.
So in the last 5 years, right, they've been an Eastern Conference power. So when they went to the finals once. They got off to a hot start and they kind of fell apart later on in the finals and Steph Curry went nuclear and stuff like that. But it seems to me that the Celtics are at a crossroads right now. I think that they're at an interesting point where Jaylen Brown, has he tired of being put in that, in trade talks every couple months, right? Does he want to have more stability? Does he want to be a guy where, I want to be a focal point on a franchise. I don't want to be the guy that's played second fiddle. And we've seen that before in NBA. We've seen Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, but you can't be the only focal point. You got to have multiple stars on your team. And that's why, you're at the perfect spot to be doing what you're doing. Now, does he need to have the coaching on his side to get his offense going? Absolutely. Yeah. That's where Mazzulla comes in. We know the adjustment. Derek White, was awful last game.
He was.
Is what I will say. He was bad. And those shots could have easily gone towards someone like Jaylen Brown. So I'm not sure why that happened. But in terms of what this team is looking like together, it's still game one. They're still one of the best teams in the conference.
I'll just say real quick, though, if they do lose this series, there's going to be something happening in Boston.
Do you think the coach gets let's go first? Or
no. Like, just sign him for an extension.
They're going to look at the roster and the construction of the roster, see if they have to move something around. But to me, they can't afford to lose this series. And that's why I was very disappointed in them in game one. And you can't lose that game.
Marcus Smart, again, had a lot of careless turnovers in game one as well. He needs to be cleaner with the ball if he's going to be that traditional point guard. And speaking of clean with the ball, the Los Angeles Lakers were very efficient last night in a game one victory, a 117-112 win over the Golden State Warriors. Shout out to Anthony Davis. I know me and Jelani get on you on a pretty much a day-to-day basis because we call you Street Clothes Davis.
You call him Street Clothes.
I actually called him the biggest waste of talent in NBA history. But he's proving me wrong these playoffs. Last night, Anthony Davis had 30 points, 11 of 19 from the field. Here's the thing, 23 rebounds. He had four blocks, right? He was an absolute dominant force in that game. LeBron, of course, 9 of 24 shooting. Not a very good night shooting-wise from the King. Still at 22 and 11 with four assists. Kind of a light night. D'Angelo Russell chipped in with 19 points. And Dennis Schroeder had 19 points as well. Whereas for the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry had 27. Kevon Looney, again, another 20 rebound night. This week of 20 rebounds. Looking like a prime Dennis Rodman out there. Klay had 25. Dante DiVincenzo had no points, but Jordan Poole at 21. So, guys, let's start off with you, Noor. What was your biggest takeaway from this game? Was it the fact that Anthony Davis was just so dominant, or was this anything else?
Definitely Anthony Davis. Having him come out and watching him put 30 points, 23 rebounds, that's a crazy number for even someone of stature, especially because we've seen him not be that level of a guy recently. And watching him do that against the defending champions, I think bodes very well for this Lakers team. And it makes you wonder, too, like, yeah, Kevon Looney's there. Yes, they have Draymond, but can someone even really stop Anthony Davis on the Warriors? No. So that's when he should be feasting and going off entirely. But it honestly, that game proved to me what I had already told you guys earlier. I'm sorry, I was a little bit right. I said Lakers have a deeper team than the Warriors do. And that's where the deeper squad showed up. I think Klay's going to have a game like that. That might be Klay's one of the best games they can get, 25 points. I don't think we can even expect 30 from him at this point of his career. Curry, though, I think he'll give you more. And Curry's going to have nights where he will go off. And that's what I think Steve Kerr needs to do. Just give the ball to Curry, make him play ISO, and go ham. And once he's playing ISO, you get guys like Jordan Poole to open up, Andrew Wiggins to open up. I'm glad to see that Poole also showed up recently. 21 points is not the best points for him.
He didn't show up at the end of the game.
Took a bad shot at the end of the game.
CTE basketball.
21, is not bad for him, though, because the past couple of seasons, has been absolutely not even a playing factor. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, that shows something. But I just don't think they have the depth to match what the Lakers have. And LeBron's not playing that well right now either. Let's keep that in mind.
Jelani, I will say this, though. The Warriors only had six free throw attempts to the Lakers. Sure. What was it, 29 free throw attempts?
Yeah, so, but we know why.
We know why. Because
they weren't inside, and they can't go inside.
And I think, talk to me about Jared Vanderbilt's defense on Steph Curry. Because I think that was, Steph was efficient, did Steph things, but Jared Vanderbilt made him work for those points. And is that something that's really a key factor going forward in the series?
I think a lot of people were sleeping on Vanderbilt coming into the series. They won the game, obviously, due to AD's brilliance, right? I was familiar, but you showed up.
You're looking like Kentucky AD.
Yes, but the thing is that they also won due to that defense that Vanderbilt had on Steph Curry. He made him very uncomfortable. I know he had 27, but if you watch the game, Steph was struggling to get those shots up. He was struggling to find his spots. And you know how Steph likes to, run around the court. He's a major cutter. He was right with him. He was getting off his screens, going up inside of screens, things of that nature. So I saw Vanderbilt have a lot of effort. So I think if he could continue to do that throughout the series, it's going to be really tough for the Warriors to win the series.
Karina, now speaking of that, what do the Warriors adjustments do the Warriors need to make going into game two to avoid going down 0-2 to LA?
Up your defense on some of the contributors on the Lakers who are getting you those points. I talked about Anthony Davis being the X factor earlier this week, and look at what wow, I can't speak. Go look at what he did. And just like Norris said, like, Lakers have depth. The Warriors need to defend that depth.
You guys want to know a crazy stat from that game one? Guess how many three-pointers the Lakers had last night?
Like, out of the team?
Out of the team. Right, the team total. Take a guess. Just take a crazy guess.
They had less than 10.
Not
they
a lot.
They had six.
Yeah.
Guess how many the Warriors had?
Didn't, like, Poole,
21.
Steph had six each.
Yeah. Poole so, had six. Steph had six. Yeah. And Klay had six.
Rob Pelinka. All done.
Talk you about that. I guess sometimes you, like, sometimes shooting a three does not be, you know, really pan out. But we will see what happens up in Northern California if the Golden State Warriors can bounce back in game two.
They
of course,
better.
We'll be back on Friday to break it all down for you on Hoop Talks.
The Met Gala may be over, but NBA playoff fits are not. Join Noor and I on Hoop Talks as we dive into all of the NBA players' best fits of the playoffs so far. Hello and welcome into Hoop Talks. Noor and I are reunited.
We used to have
a little podcast here called In the Zone where we talked about NBA, WNBA, and we're going to steal that name back.
Hell yeah.
It's our own name,
the
so not
NBA
really stealing.
The NBA is not ready. The WNBA is not ready. The Toronto is not ready.
The Toronto.
The Canada is not ready because the girlies are back, baby.
That is right. And so we're bringing back our segment In the Zone. And today we have a very fun topic. It's NBA playoff fits. The Met Gala was this week. We saw lots of athletes there as well. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was there. He was looking pretty fly. I mean, he always looks kind of cool.
I think he must be the coolest student in the NBA. It's not just like what, because every time he wears something, it's just so different, but it's so well put together. Mm-hmm. It's monochromatic. It has great monotones underneath it. He understands how to piece things together. Everything, every fit has their own sunglasses. Like, he just does everything perfectly. And how could you not have Shai at the Met Gala? And how could Shai not steal the show at the Met Gala?
Exactly. And with his, like, captions on Instagram, too, he's a lyricist. Like, he's
the coolest person in the NBA. Like, even when he speaks to the media or, like, anybody else, you're just like,
that's his voice.
Yeah, how are you this composed as a youngin, you know? Crazy. He's like your age, pretty much, Cree.
Because Canadians are cool. But somebody who wasn't at the Met Gala, who made it very clear in his tweet, was James Harden, who tweeted that he wants to be at the Met Gala, but every year he's in the playoffs when it happens. So he wore this very bold fit, I'd say, this like blue furry jacket, tracksuit type thing. Noor, what are your thoughts on this fit?
It looks like either the symbol for the Golden State Warriors or the flag of South Africa. Like, that's what I'm getting from this. And hey, listen, who am I to talk about what kind of fits there are, what kind of fashion is? Because we know James Harden has always been so into his getup, what he wears, just finding the most chaotic pieces and putting them together, but still making it work. And it sucks. He's right. Like, you know what? You made the playoffs, but at what cost?
He looks like an old couch in a way. Where it's like the kind of like couch cover that you have at your grandparents' house, where you're like, this is from like the 70s, the 80s type of vibe.
Are his pants like furry or is that corduroy?
It looks like it's furry. I think
the whole fit is fur.
Yeah. I don't know. I would rate it not so high. Maybe like 6 out of 10.
See, the thing with fashion is, like, it's in the eye of the beholder. My eyes are not a fan of this one.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. But I see where he's going with it because we know the kind of personality he has.
He's also rocking it, so I feel like that helps.
The confidence.
Yeah,
no matter what you put on, it's the confidence. And he's got the swagger like no other.
There is a fur outfit that did work. And that was Jimmy Butler's outfit from game one of Heat Sixers. Like, this is how you do a fur coat. This is how you do a fur outfit. I think the color is really nice. He also wore a coat for game two that was, like, brown.
Yeah.
I think, like, Jimmy's been killing it with the fashion looks. I really like this. I'd probably give this, like, a 9 out of 10.
When I saw him do the walk tunnel and he was, like, heading into MSG, he just looked like not only did he mean business, but he was, I don't know. Like, he was just there to cause problems.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, that's the kind of mentality you seem to possess when you're walking in something dressed like that. It's Himi. And again, it goes back to your confidence and the way that you carry yourself. So anybody can wear that red jacket, but it's about how you wear it. And you already know it's Jimmy Buckets. He's has the most strong mind there is, and he's heading into the arena with that coat. You're done for.
Yeah, no, I know he was out for game two, but he was courtside with his brown jacket on, and he was just going.
What are you reading that, Cree? Out of 10?
That brown jacket? We'll pull it up, but I think that was also like maybe like an 8.5 out of 10. Yeah. I really liked it a lot.
For me, it was an 8 in the red one. I think that's a 10 out of 10 for me, actually.
Oh, okay.
Actually, hold on. Maybe 9. 9 out of 10. Depends. Is it real for Jimmy?
That's true.
Is it real for Jimmy? They'll talk about that after. But I'm going to give it a 9. Holding on the pita argument, and then we'll give it a 10 if it's not.
My last fit before we move on to yours was Josh Hart. He had this clean fit. It was like the beige jacket with the white hoodie and sweats underneath. It was just clean. It was a very like Knicks look for him.
Yeah.
He played really great. I feel like, I don't know, maybe sometimes if you walk in with a good outfit, a good strut, that gives you confidence for a good game. I thought he looked great. And he was like eating in the post game presser too, like he always says. He's just like sitting away, like eating chicken wings. Like, he's living his life.
He looks good. No, he looks really good. I like a good it's very easy to put together an outfit when you have the neutral tones, when you have the whites, when you have the beige, and it just makes you look, no matter what you're wearing, just put together and almost like, I don't know, like, I don't want to say clean, but just it's a clean girl aesthetic. Oh my God, that's what they're doing over there. I love that for Josh Hart. Yeah, as he should.
So my morning in New York.
Help me pick up my outfit for tonight's game. What color should I choose, guys? That's what he should be doing. No, but he looks good. Even RJ Barrett, he looks almost, it's very cash, but it's also not. You know, like, it looks like he just grabbed a pair of jeans, grabbed a pair of shirts, threw on a thing.
Almost giving Canadian tuxedo.
Almost giving Canadian. I could see that in downtown Toronto in the fall. You know, I could see that work. But for me, actually, I'm going to go to the Western Conference. And I'm going to have a quick look at none other than Dennis Schroeder. I don't know what it is about that fit. I don't know. It's the most simple thing you can find. I think it's like a Walmart t-shirt or something, you know? Yeah. That's like a bean that you probably get from like Plato's Closet, like a thrift store. But just the way he put it together. And I think Dennis Schroeder, again, it's the swagger, it's the confidence, it's how you carry yourself.
It's the accessories too, I feel like. The accessories put together this whole fit. Because like you said, he has this simple like t-shirt and jeans and beanie. But like, look at his glasses. Yeah. Look at that bag. Look at that necklace.
And he's matching it all. So like, you've got the whole black persona for sure. But then he's like, okay, I got the white glasses. Got to get the white chains. Got to get a purse. It's fully black, but got a little bit of white popping on top of it. And then he's carrying what? His iPad next to him, which is also just kind of fits in the vibe that he looks like a new age techno wizard. That's what I'm getting the vibe here. And also Rui Hachimura, again, simple, but it works so well on him. I love that fit. It's just black, it's white. You got a black t-shirt, a little bit of slangs on it. Put on a nice little chain at the top. That chain does wonders. I'm glad it's also not gold because it ties in with the fit together with the black and the white. And he just, again, effortless, but it just works. It looks so good.
The Lakers had a team meeting and they were like, okay, this is the look white we're going with for tonight's game. I love it.
You think LeBron hosts those? LeBron's like, guys, so forget the game plan for tonight. What are we wearing? What's the color palette for tonight's
game? At
this point,
I think Dennis Schroeder should be hosting those.
I agree. Well, another guy, we're very familiar with him. When I actually first saw this fit, I was like, Serge Ibaka? I'm like, is that him? No. Bismack Biyombo. Looking absolutely crazy. It's not this one. It's going to be the next one after. The other side, actually. So one right afterwards is where he's wearing his... This is actually a screenshot of a video that the Phoenix Suns posted, because the Phoenix Suns were like, no, a picture's not good enough. We gotta get him to do a twirl, we gotta get him to do a full 360, we gotta see it from every angle, every side, coming out of the hotel room, carrying your bags, being all about business. And that's what Bismack does. It's a very prominent color, it's very blue, very in your face, but it just works. I don't know what it's about it, but it just works. Great.
He looks like a businessman who's going to get business done. Like, just to put it simply like that, I thought it looked like we've been talking about confidence this entire segment. I think all of these players, they're like, yeah, we're here to look really good.
Yeah,
I think this was perfect.
Wonder, like, I'm sure they also have stylists and stuff and like people to help them dress, but it's still like you gotta have the swagger to carry those clothes with you, right? And I'd love to see them doing that. And Bismack Biyombo again, like, who would have thought be on the Suns right now and having his own little walkout reel with the red carpet rolled out right for
thriving.
Him? He's thriving. He's
love
thriving.
To see it.
He's looking great. I love the blue. But okay, the number one guy for me though.
Oh yeah,
this is the best dressed man in the NBA in my opinion. Actually. Maybe tied with Shai. I'll say tied with Shai. Okay. I love how Shai dresses too. So I'm going to say tied with Shai. But guys, Devin Booker knows exactly how to make something happen, either in a very casual way. If you just look at his fit right now, but Devin Booker, black Prada. I'll show you the full fun afterwards too. Mm-hmm. It's black Prada. He's got his khakis on, black sunglasses, a nice little tight chain, a little bit thicker than usual, but it just looks good and it works. And he just, again, it looks like he just grabs something and he puts it together, but his fits are just so normal, you know, like almost where you're just like, oh, I can see my boyfriend wearing that. I can see myself buying my brother something like this, or I can see this being like some normal dude's like inspiration, Jelani. So that's what I get from Devin Booker, and I love how he dresses.
That wasn't even a shout out, that was a shot. I loved it. But yeah, no, he always, I like what you said, he does always kind of look like normal, and it doesn't even mean it like in a bad way. You're not used to it, because like NBA players do tend to, like we saw with James Harden, tend to go a little bit
Russell Westbrook out of left field. Well, Dylan Brooks, like we all know how they all dress, but when you see one that's like a little bit more, again, nothing to them, I love how they dress, but it's just like, am I gonna wear what Harden wear every single day? I don't think so. But I might wear what Devin Booker is wearing every single day, and to that I'm like, guys got taste. Guys got taste.
This was so much fun to like go through all the fits. The playoffs are always the best time for players to be like showing off what they have and their styles. But we will be back on Friday to do more hoop talks. So we'll see you guys then. Thanks so much for tuning in.